This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and we're here with you until 11:30 this morning. Note the end time, 11:30, so we can bring you coverage of the Bruins-Habs Game 2, which takes place at 11:30 this morning. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Stanley Cup playoffs, Winnipeg Jets, and general NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. On this Saturday morning, the first Saturday in the month of May, which of course means it's Kentucky Derby Day, for those of you in the horse racing set, I say good morning to my colleagues Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good morning.
Kentucky Derby Day, meaning they put the hockey game on at 9:30 in the morning in Vancouver.
That's right, because the NHL, you know, NBC matters more than anybody else.
Because I guess they couldn't put the Kings-Anaheim game because it was too early there, 9:30 in the morning, so they had to throw the Canadian team in.
That's right.
Didn't they sign a 10-year deal? Like, does it matter at this point?
Well, I'm confused why they couldn't just do a double, you know, why can't you just do the game at 6 o'clock? You know, 7 Eastern, 6 o'clock, and then do the late game after that and put the late game on NBC Sports Network or whatever.
Don't you want to expand your viewership? Don't you want to allow people to watch? Like, I don't really want to get up. I don't live in Vancouver, but get up in the morning, have a coffee on Saturday, and just start watching a game. Like, that's not really how I would get into watching hockey. It seems like an odd decision by the horse racing experts at NBC.
I don't think you can't really blame horse racing.
Well, no, it's people who, you know, whoever's in charge of NBC now. I don't remember who that is.
I'm not sure right now. I can't remember.
Anyhow, it's to me, it's stupid. I don't understand why the American viewers, and there's generally less than there are in Canada, except their population's obviously far larger than ours, is dictating when the games are on. But hey, it's not the first time the NHL screwed up.
Richie's off to a ranting start this morning. Ezzy, good morning.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like watching Seabiscuit right now and getting pumped up for the Kentucky Derby. So come on, let's talk about hockey here, Drew. Let's go.
Didn't you just eat a Seabiscuit before we came on?
That's clever. Before we get to the NHL and last night's games, and we're going to go through series by series and everything else, and we've got some great interviews lined up. Al Strachan's going to join us in 30 minutes' time. George Johnson from the Calgary Herald's going to join us in the second hour. And then David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News is going to join us in the final hour. Before we get into the NHL, got to give a shout out to the St. John's Ice Caps. They took care of business. They won their first round series yesterday, 3-1, by defeating the Albany River Rats 4-1 last night. Andrew Gordon with the hat trick, and the Jets farm team moves on to the second round in the Calder Cup playoffs.
Okay.
Just wanted to give the shout out.
Yeah, next topic.
Okay, let's start talking about last night's games. You want to start with the Pittsburgh Rangers series last night, where the Rangers took a 1-0 lead, winning the game 3-2 in overtime last night. It ends up being Derek Brassard gets credit for the goal, even though it seems to have gone in twice. They missed the first time. But long story short, the Rangers have a 1-0 lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, I think the Rangers are going to give the Penguins all they asked for, and it would not surprise me in the least to see the Rangers beat the Penguins in the entirety of the series.
Yeah, Andrew, you know, I think the Rangers will beat Pittsburgh. I think they match up well against Pittsburgh because if you look at the way the team's constructed, and we'll kind of do a preview/review of last night's game, you know, preview of the series. As if you look at the way they're constructed, with McDonough and Girardi, didn't have really the best first round by any means, but that combination and then Mark Stahl and Anton Stroman has really performed quite well so far through the playoffs. In fact, you could probably say Stahl and Stroman have been their, you know, their best pairing. And then you have Moore and Klein. But when you look at the top four defense in the Rangers, it's a very good top four, talent-wise and you know, obviously playing well for the most part. And you look at Pittsburgh, it's a top-heavy team. I know Brandon Sutter got some goals there in the first series, but really, you look at the way Pittsburgh is constructed, it's a top-heavy team with Malkin and Crosby, especially when they put them on the same line. And I think the Rangers are pretty well suited with the depth they have from, you know, forward line one through four, and with the top four pairing they have, the top four pairings, excuse me, to be able to beat Pittsburgh. And then you look at Ned Ezzy, and Marc-Andre Fleury, obviously with some terrible gas in the first round, but overall I don't think played that poorly. But then you have Henrik Lundqvist, who's a superior goalie in my mind to Marc-Andre Fleury, and I assume to most people's mind. And I think Alain Vigneault's done a nice job with this team. I think the Rangers have the edge here, and we have to obviously point out the fact that Sidney Crosby hasn't been himself. And I think he's hurt, but we don't know for sure.
Right, and starting with last night's game, which obviously went to overtime and the Rangers won, I think you look at these two teams, and you mentioned that the Penguins are top-heavy, and we know that. They've got the two best players in the world. And I look at last night's game, and to me, it begins and ends with the way they played in their defensive zone. That's the Penguins. If you watch that game, Rangers didn't dominate the Penguins. I mean, the Penguins made terrible gaffes, starting with that first goal, where both Niskanen goes to the corner, and the puck goes to the corner, and both guys go to the corner. And the Penguins have had problems throughout these playoffs with their defensive zone coverage, and I know they're missing a guy like Brooks Orpik, but both Niskanen and Paul Martin go to the corner there, and they leave the guy all alone in front of the net. That was the second goal, actually. But they have had so many problems with their defensive zone coverage, and you look at these teams, and yeah, I think we're going to give the edge in goal and probably on defense to the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a team that is a better offensive team. And if this team has any chance, not only do they need Sidney Crosby going, they need Malkin going. And I know James Neal and Lee Stempniak had a nice goal yesterday. But this team isn't going to win 3-2 games. This team has, if they're going to win games, they're going to have to score some more goals. This is a team that's an offensive team. They're not as good defensively as that 2009 team. They're not even shades of that team. And that's because, and you look at a guy like Rob Scuderi as well, I didn't think had a very good game. I don't think he had a very
skate well enough anymore.
I don't think he had a very good series against the Columbus Blue Jackets either. So the Pittsburgh Penguins are having all types of defensive problems in their own zone, and that's really leading to them not being able to play their type of game. Because, yes, Sidney Crosby is definitely injured. And I think the biggest tell for me that he was injured is in the first round on faceoffs. He wasn't getting low, and he was really having trouble in the faceoff circle against Brandon Dubinsky. And it's just continuing. And Sidney Crosby, even at 70%, is pretty darn good. And he had some chances yesterday. But if he's not playing well defensively, and he was a -3 yesterday, guys. He was on the ice for all three goals, and he looks lost out there. And it's tough when your leader is lost. And I know that other guys can contribute. They've got other players on this team that can score. But when Crosby is playing like that, it really, I think, trickles throughout the entire team and affects them negatively.
Well, you mentioned, you mentioned Rob Scuderi there too. And I think his issues, and even in round one against a bigger Columbus team, are going to be exacerbated by a faster Rangers team. This is a team, they play very similar kind of the way Vancouver played, not surprisingly, with Alain Vigneault. Move the puck. Don't have as many rats on their team, so they're not as disliked, and I think that helps them, to be honest. I think Vancouver motivated the other team by acting arrogant in many ways. I think the Rangers just go about their business.
Yeah, they sort of just do their thing quietly. Yeah, they're just a hockey team. I mean, there's no
move the puck. I mean, aside from Carcillo, do they have any of that guys? Do any guys really, aggravate the other team? Think about it. You go through their roster. Not really.
No, you're pretty much a team of, for the most part, like you said, Carcillo. But, I mean, Carcillo did chip in with a goal in game seven.
Oh, everything that Vigneault did in round one worked.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you look through their roster, Dominic Moore has aggravated some people before, but not really. You're talking about a team.
I think given his family history and everything else, people have no problem with the way Dominic Moore does his thing.
I mean, he's a great story.
Yeah.
He's an absolute great story. But the point is there's nothing to motivate. If you think about them playing Philly, I mean, Philly had their number at Pittsburgh, granted.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a motivation there, Crosby, Giroux, all that stuff. There's nothing here. So it's hard to get up for the Rangers.
And it's going to be a much less physical series than the Flyers and the Rangers. And you have some guys that can throw some hits, Craig Adams, Tanner Glass. Brooks Orpik is their biggest hitter. He didn't play yesterday. But if you look at these two teams, I think one of the biggest mismatches as well, and it always comes down to matchups, and it always comes down to depth. Bortuzzo and Scuderi were being really terrorized by the Derek Brassard and Benoit Pouliot line, and those guys had a great game. Benoit Pouliot, in fact, had 2 points on the overtime winning goal, so that was a mismatch. I think the depth of the Pittsburgh Penguins isn't as good as it used to be, and I think that's affecting them. They didn't used to have weaknesses throughout their lineup, and I know Marcel Gotch is back, and they're missing Gibbons, a guy they called up from the AHL, but they're still missing those depth pieces, and they're just not as deep as they used to be.
Well, I think you make a good point when you talk about the depth there. I mean, you look at through the Rangers lineup, they can roll, you know, they don't have the Crosby and the Malkin talent, but they have 3 to 4 solid lines that they can roll at you, and there's not a huge drop off from one line to the next.
True.
Like Pittsburgh, I mean, you look at Pittsburgh, after you get past, you know, the top six, it's there's a, I mean, you know, they're sort of similar to the Winnipeg Jets in that they don't really have a third line. They have 2 fourth lines after the top six. Obviously, the, you know, the front line talent is superior, and I don't think I need to tell anybody that. But New York can keep rolling at them, and Pittsburgh's going to have trouble with them. Like you said, on the back end especially. You know, that third line, that you know, or the line of Boyle. Who's Boyle play with? Boyle. Boyle was Boyle.
Plays with Dorsett and Moore.
Dorsett and Moore. Yeah. I mean, they're you know, that's a tough line. That's a big line and a tough line to handle.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, another factor to take into account is the ice time. And you look at Alain Vigneault's ice time, again, similar to what he had in Vancouver. None of these guys play big minutes during the year. So who do you think is going to be in better shape right now? Now, that, I think, plays into my next point slash, you know, I guess, rhetorical question. And that would be, you know, Pittsburgh, get it together here. You're playing tomorrow and Monday. The Rangers have played 3 and 4 nights, and then they're coming back, and they're playing 3 and 4 nights again. I realize there's essentially no travel here. They were taking the train in the Philly series, and they're going to be taking, what, a one-hour flight to Pittsburgh. So, I mean, the travel shouldn't really be too much of an issue, but you're still playing at a playoff intensity back-to-back nights twice in a week.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh has to be able to take a 2-1 lead. If you let the Rangers get through this, the game 3, and they have a 2-1 lead, obviously they'd have home ice, and they'd be able to get through that hard stretch of games. I like the Rangers anyways, but Pittsburgh isn't doing themselves any favors, especially last night.
I agree with you. And I mean, I think, and then, you know, and we sort of touched on it briefly, but then the goal, I mean, you saw Henrik Lundqvist yesterday. He was terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, so now you're telling the, you know, the Penguins that you're going to have to score. I mean, the Penguins are probably going to have to score 3 goals a game on Lundqvist to win the series.
Absolutely. And even when you go back to the Rangers series, Richie, I agree with Richie, by the way, that Rangers Philly series was underwhelming for me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but
terrible.
To me, that was the series I was looking the most forward to. And sure, it went to 7 games, but the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I know this is an old Claude Noel-ism, but really, they haven't played their A game throughout the playoffs, I think. I think we'd all agree with that. Even against the Columbus Blue Jackets, Malkin's hat trick aside and a couple of performances aside, the Pittsburgh Penguins right now as a team are not playing at, I mean, this is the second best team in the Eastern Conference here. I mean, this isn't a team, this isn't an average mediocre team. I mean, this is the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team that has aspirations for the Stanley Cup. They've got to turn it up. They've got too many guys that aren't playing at the level that they're used to. And I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody else hasn't noticed here. I'm just saying that they at least, at the very least, want to make the Rangers earn a 1-0 series lead. And I really think Pittsburgh was the better team yesterday. I just think that, you know, the way that they're covering in the defensive zone is really troubling to me. And, you know, the two guys that I was worried about the most on that back end are the two guys that I think are playing the best, and that's Chris Letang and Paul Martin. I think the depth is really tested when a guy like Brooks Orpik is out. And Olli Maatta, sometimes you can see that this is his first ever playoff. He's a young defenseman. And I think there's certain times where there's too much pressure on him. So I think, you know, I'm looking for a big, as Richie mentioned, a big bounce back game from the Penguins. You can't go 2 down back to New York. You just can't do that. It'll be a very short series.
As a guy who's got a bunch of Rangers in his hockey pool, I'm okay with that. But regardless, let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Wild and the Blackhawks series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve Overtime Pool. CompuStitch Embroidery Design has been serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. For more information, visit CompuStitch.net. Gentlemen, the other game won last night was between the Chicago Blackhawks and the Minnesota Wild.
Great game.
Great game. Safe to say that the in that series, which we'll talk about, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks are going to be an overwhelming favorite. But last night, you know, it was a situation where the game was a lot closer than the final score would indicate. Blackhawks winning 5-2 at the end, one of those goals being an empty netter. But right up until, you know, the 10 or so minute mark of the third period, it was a 2-2 game.
Right, and you mentioned that it was, and I said that off air, I really do believe that was a lot closer than the score indicates, in the sense that the Minnesota Wild clawed back down 2 goals, and you know this Minnesota Wild team has done this against the Colorado Avalanche, and they've done this against almost every team in the National Hockey League this year. They do struggle when they get out of their style of play, Richie, because they like to play that defensive style. Mm-hmm. But with Ilya Brizgalov in net, they're not going to be able to play that style, unfortunately. When you've got Josh Harding back there, or even Nicklas Backstrom back there, they even struggled at times with Darcy Kuemper back there, but they were able to score goals. But they kept this game close. You mentioned that it was tied in the third period. To me, when Patrick Kane responded after the Kyle Brodziak goal, and I got to give these guys credit, because I've been really impressed with Zach Parise, who is playing, I think, the best hockey that he's played since around 2006, 2007 with the New Jersey Devils. I mean, Parise and Koivu have been excellent. Jason Pominville has been excellent. These guys have played really well. They're playing at their max capacity. But then Patrick Kane comes back down the ice, yep, with Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin on the ice, kind of fakes a pass, mm-hmm, and scores arguably one of the nicest goals, yep, or the nicest goal of the playoffs. And back, the lead is back. And it's incredible, because we've talked about this time and time again with the Chicago Blackhawks. They have game breakers on their team that just teams don't have. And we're talking about some pretty good players on the Minnesota Wild. Matt Molson wasn't even mentioned. Jason Pominville, as I mentioned. Zach Parise, Mikko Koivu, one of the best two-way players. Ryan Suter, I think, should have been a Norris candidate, even a Hart candidate. But Patrick Kane does stuff on the ice. You can't, I mean, can you... I don't know, Ilya Brizgalov, we can make all the jokes we want. He puts that puck in a place where, I don't care what goalie you are, you can't stop that. So, I mean, to me, those guys are playing at such a high level. They're almost unbeatable at this point. When Taves and Hossa and Kane and Sharp and these guys, mm-hmm, Duncan Keith scored 4 points in the Game 6 against the St. Louis Blues, they're almost unstoppable when these guys are at their peak.
There's maybe five guys in the entire NHL that can do what Patrick Kane did on that game-winning goal.
I don't even know if there are five guys. Yeah, that can
five
do
might
that.
Be. T- I mean, five might be at the high end. I mean, that backhand was insane. The whole move was insane, and I think that ultimately, I mean, the Blackhawks are just. I think they're just a more talented team than the Minnesota Wild are.
I have a hard time seeing any team beating the Blackhawks. Maybe the Bruins. I don't see any other
could
team.
Could have a Stanley Cup final rematch, Richie.
I mean, I think that's what it looks like right now. And the Habs might have something to say about that. But I don't see the Kings or the Ducks. I don't see the Wild being the Hawks. I don't see the Kings or the Ducks being the Hawks either. Doesn't mean they won't give them a run. But I this team is just so good. You look at it. You look at Taves, who's to me is Mark Messier. You look at Kane, who's his top scorer, flourishes in that role. The defense, tremendous defense. Corey Crawford's really come into his own.
Yep.
The guys on their team know their roles. Hossa, one of the most underrated players of his generation. They're just a pleasure to watch. They play the game the right way. You know, Minnesota, Mike Yeo is this team playing a style I've said it all year I don't think is conducive to success based on the roster that he has. You know, he coaches his team like they're the LA Kings. I just think he has a speed and a skilled roster. And you look through the lines, Drew. Let's go through the Minnesota lines. I just don't understand the style of play. Koivu, Molson, and Coyle. Skill. Pominville, Parise, Granlund. All skill. And speed. Okay? Niederreiter, Brodziak, Healy. So Niederreiter, he's very good on the forecheck. Obviously scored that big goal in overtime. Healy can't move out there. Brodziak's a good checking line center. And then he's got Halla, who's a great skater. McCormick and Veju, who are, you know, probably on borrowed
fourth
time.
Line guys.
Yeah. But I mean, the point is, that is a skill speed team. And they play every game to win 2-1. And I realize their goaltending is terrible. And Brizgalov is awful. And that falls on Chuck Fletcher for getting Brizgalov and thinking he might be the guy who'd help them if need be. Sorry.
No, well, that was the only option they had.
Well, no, they could have got Halak. They could have got somebody else. They traded with Buffalo.
I think he was traded to another team, right? But okay.
But they traded with Buffalo, the deadline. You want to add him in there? Sure, you make a cap. You have to move money around. But the point is, that's who they brought in. They brought in the cheap netminder. You get what you pay for here.
He was good down the break, but okay.
He's terrible.
No, but look at his stats, though, Rich.
As he's terrible. I don't care what his stats are. He is awful.
But when he was acquired, they had no other option.
The point is also the system he plays in.
Okay, but he wasn't horrible for them. His numbers were good.
In the playoffs, he's been terrible.
No, but he didn't. He's only played four games now. But
there's a reason why.
Right. Well, they don't have anybody else.
Well, no. Now they don't have anybody else. They're right. I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean,
Ilya they've had a troubled time with injuries to their goaltenders.
Yes, nobody's disputing that.
They're on our fourth goaltender.
I agree,
right
but
now.
They knew they were going to be on these two guys. They knew it was going to be Kemper and him. They knew that.
Right.
Regardless of the goaltending situation, I mean, we know that the Chicago Blackhawks, top to bottom, are a better team than the Minnesota Wild are.
Yep.
And I mean, and it's going to play. That I mean, I'd be surprised if this went longer than five games this series.
So would I. I mean, Minnesota's going to be in the games, as he mentioned. The score is closer. The game is closer than the score indicated last night.
They're going to be in the games because of the style that they play. They don't let themselves get run out of the rink.
Last night was a perfect example of what can happen when the Minnesota Wild play a pretty darn good game, and then the Chicago Blackhawks can just come right back up the ice.
Yeah.
And score. I mean, and the Chicago Blackhawks, this is a team, we're talking about a dynasty in the making here. I don't know what you consider a dynasty, if it's three or four cups. If this team wins a third cup in 5 years, I think that's a dynasty, right?
So especially in this day and age of the NHL with the salary cap, where it's almost designed to prevent dynasties from occurring. If the Blackhawks win 3 in 5 years, you can certainly talk about them as a dynasty. No questions about that.
What about last night again? Both games. 2-0 leads. Are gone. Can you believe it?
I think
I love it.
It's great for the NHL.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, that I don't have a problem with. And, you know, I sort of like that these 2-0 leads are, they're somewhat evaporating organically. The NHL hasn't, you know, they're not evaporating because the NHL is changing the rules to, you know, well, if you get a 2-0 lead, you're automatically on a penalty, you know, because, you know, sometimes you're afraid they're going to institute rules like that sort of nonsense.
Well, Adrian Nikoyan was on our show earlier this year on NHL Midweek, and he talked about how players don't necessarily play the system as much in the playoffs. I think you're seeing that. I think it's good. I mean, I know that the coaches are still going to get on them. You know, Mike Yeo and those guys get on them to play the system, but they will stray from that at times, and I think it helps the viewing audience.
Why do you think that happens, though? Why do you, you know, you've played 82 games, or, you know, for the most part, you've played the whole season where you've been, all you're talking about is the system.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because when you're playing in the regular season, the emotions are not as high, and you're able to control your emotions better, and you're able to plug in, you know, I have to do this. But when you're in the playoffs and you see the prize ahead and you play the same guys night in, night out, the emotions get the best of you and you want to do more than maybe you ought to. And I think sometimes that ends up being a good thing, sometimes it ends up being a bad thing. But I think it's a good thing at the end of the day for people watching the games.
And you look at a lot of the goals that are scored in the playoffs. This isn't just this year. It's year after year. Point shots, mad scrambles where a guy jams at the puck or it comes loose and there's a rebound. Look at the way the Pittsburgh Penguins reacted yesterday. And I think this is a decently talented defensive team. I think they have their issues here. But you look at Broussard comes in. They think it hits the crossbar, but Broussard reacts. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the Pittsburgh Penguins totally get disjointed. Someone else goes into the corner. Sidney Crosby's in the other corner, comes back out, comes to Pouliot from Broussard in the corner, and they're completely scrambling around the ice. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins completely stopped playing and were completely unstructured after that, I guess, goal/non-goal.
Mm-hmm.
But, it happens. This is the playoffs here. Richie mentions the emotion. He's right.
If the Penguins go out relatively meekly in this round, I know we're switching back to that series. Is Bylsma's job still in jeopardy?
I think his job is still in jeopardy. I think GM Ray Shiro's job might be in jeopardy as well.
Really?
Yes.
You think it could be a wholesale cleaning?
I think it's possible.
Well, that's something we'll have to watch as the second round of the playoffs continues on. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Hockey Hall of Fame journalist and author Al Strachan. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
9:30 in the morning here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, online at illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And if you want to find us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/illegalcurve.
I think we're just waiting on Al here.
Okay.
Drop the call.
Oh, the call got dropped. Okay, we'll call him right back then.
But, you know, quickly, Drew, on the point we were talking about before, the blown leads and everything else that comes along with it in the National Hockey League playoffs, it's been a pleasure to watch. And I think also, you know, the goaltending hasn't been the best, and some of these go hand in hand. You know, goaltending does, you know, poor goaltending and sometimes defensive breakdowns do go hand in hand. You know, you have Minnesota, who's on like their fourth goaltender, as you mentioned, but even the guy, teams who are on their number one netminder, or even number two. I mean, I think one of the interesting things, and we'll talk about it later in the show, is what Anaheim's doing. You know, with Frederik Andersen, Jonas Hiller, and, you know, I'll tell you something that's interesting. It's Bruce Boudreau's comments to the media. He's so honest. You know, Hiller didn't do the job, or Andersen is... the way he talks about his team is such, is so refreshing.
It's refreshing also, Richie, because I think that that gives the goaltender who's not starting more confidence. To know that if you are not getting the job done, the goalie who's currently got the number one title isn't getting the job done, I should say, that you can come in there and you can play. And, you know, we've seen the Anaheim Ducks should give the Winnipeg Jets some of their goaltenders, because they've had four good goaltenders this year, and they traded Victor Foss to Edmonton. But John Gibson, many people believe, will end up possibly getting the starting role next year as Jonas Hiller is a UFA.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Frederik Andersen. He hasn't been good, and he's young, and this is his first playoff experience. Jonas Hiller has playoff experience, but has also struggled at times. Right now, we'll have to maybe wait till throughout the show, but I think there's a good chance that Hiller plays tonight.
Well, no, I think it's going to be Andersen, as far as I know.
Did they announce that?
That's what I was led to believe, but I mean, we can confirm that. One of the things, though, is, you know, if you hear Boudreau talk about the goalies, you know, completely the opposite of what Paul Maurice does here. And I realize Winnipeg and Anaheim are two different markets completely. But I think the honesty is refreshing. I think one thing with Paul Maurice I'd like to see more of in the next season is for him to just be more honest. And I think, you know, you hear a lot of spin. And, this guy had a good game. Everybody has a good game all the time. I like to hear more honesty. And I think once you're honest for a consistent period of time, I think if you're honest or more forthright only sometimes, it gets blown out of proportion. But if you're always that way, I don't think the media always jumps on it, and I think it's better for the, I guess, at least the listening public in terms of, you know, radio.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. He's also author. His latest book is called 99 Gretzky, His Game, His Story, to talk about the NHL playoffs, Al Strachan. Al, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. I mixed up the time, but that's because I've been on Eastern time. And so, but anyway, we're all set now. No problem.
Absolutely. We're pleased to have you join us. Al, we just mentioned, of course, the new book, which if our audience hasn't read it yet, I'm not sure what you're waiting for. Get out, purchase it. Great book about Wayne Gretzky. Got to start with him, because we saw the Washington Capitals clean house earlier this week, and we know that Gretzky and Capitals owner Ted Leonsis have a relationship. At least it seems that they have a relationship. You know, do you expect Gretzky to get back into the game over the next couple of years, and do you think that Washington is potentially a team that would be of interest to him?
What people have to realize is that every time a decent level job comes available, Wayne gets a call. Like, it's the first person on everybody's list, and he's turned down pretty well every team in the league so far, and I think he'll turn down Washington. We were chatting last Tuesday or Wednesday or something, you know, just chatting and that sort of stuff. And I was in Florida at the time, and he was in California, and we were joking about the weather in other parts of the world. He says, I don't know how I could ever live anywhere other than California. He said, I had to make a trip to Edmonton earlier this year. He said, it was 85 Fahrenheit when I left here in California, minus 45 when I got to Edmonton, you know, 130 degree difference. He said, I'm going to live in that kind of climate. And Washington certainly is no Edmonton, fortunately for Washington, but it's still very cold and a lot of the year, and there's a lot of rain, and it's not that pleasant. It's certainly not Southern California. So that would be a factor right away. And of course, he's handling Trevor's career. His son Trevor is in the Chicago Cubs organization, and they seem to be bouncing him around. He started as a catcher, then he was an outfielder. He's playing first base not long ago, so he's doing that. He gets along great with Paulina, and you know, there were a lot of people who said that there were problems there. Well, there aren't problems there. We were talking about that. He'd been in Mexico for a week, and Paulina and Dustin Johnson, the golfer, for those who don't know, she's engaged to live about a mile from me in Florida, and so that was why I was talking to him last week just to say I'd been out for had a drink with Paulina and Dustin and stuff like that, and we were just chatting about our families and things, and he was saying how much he liked Dustin and how happy he was for them and how he'd be visiting them and stuff like that. So right now he seems to be very caught up in his family. And the other thing you have to know about those kind of jobs is that none of them gets done without Gary's approval. And the Gary will be discussing this matter with Leonsis, and Leonsis will put a lot of weight on what Gary says. And Gary might want Wayne in there, but I'm not sure that Wayne wants to have anything to do with something that was arranged by Gary. But that's just speculation on my part. He doesn't hold grudges as long as I do.
Gary, and, of course, being NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Yeah. So the point is that every time one of these comes up, there's somebody says, well, they're going to call Wayne Gretzky. And Wayne says, no, well, I'm not sure yet. And so there's all this, well, Gary, he may be going to X, wherever it is. I mean, can you think of too many cities that had a high-level job in the last 3 or 4 years that you didn't hear mm-hmm. Gretzky's name involved with? And how many of them have turned out to have anything attached to it? So it may happen, but I don't see any real hope for it.
Al, we wanted to switch topics with you and talk to you about the CBC. Of course, you used to be on the Hockey Night in Canada hot stove. We've seen a lot of cuts to the CBC recently, and we know that CBC lost out on the new television deal in the sense that they don't have the exclusive rights, and Rogers is obviously taking over as the national broadcaster. What do you think happens to the CBC network if they don't have that Hockey Night in Canada revenue?
You're more into a political question there than a hockey question, but there's going to be, I think, an increased clamoring from the public to say, why are we paying for this? The only thing I ever watched on that network was Hockey Night. When I was there, I was told that 46 or so, say half, the ad revenue for the entire week for the CBC came in during the 6 hours of Hockey Night in Canada. So they're getting half their money from Hockey Night in Canada, and now they're not going to get any money from Hockey Night in Canada. And even with that, they were assessing the taxpayers roughly $1 billion per annum to give you that network. And considering what's happening with all over-the-air TV networks, not just the CBC, but with regard to the kind of availability we now have for the other networks, the specialty networks, and what you can get on your computer and what you can get on your phone and all that sort of stuff. These are tough times for networks. So I think this could be the beginning of the end for the CBC as we know it. But as I say, that's more a political question than a hockey question.
Now, Bob Nicholson leaves Hockey Canada, earlier, last month it would be. Where do you see him ending up? I'm assuming it's going to be in the National Hockey League in some form, and do you have any idea where you think he'll go?
No, but I think he'll be number two on everybody's list after Gretzky. Bob is a very capable guy, and he's been involved with hockey at that level, the administrative high elite end level, for years and years now, and he gets things done, and he can deal with people, he can deal with the IOC, and he can deal with Gary, and he can deal with the players and all these things. Now, the IOC wouldn't be that big a factor if he were to get a team job, but it just illustrates the fact that this guy is good at getting along with people and is good at getting the various factions to work together to get things done, and that's what you need today. You know, so if you replace IOC, say, with agents, there's another commodity in the hockey world that he can get along with, and so he is a very capable guy, and I'm sure that he will end up somewhere. As to where, I don't really know. I couldn't see him, for instance, people were talking about him going into Vancouver, which I don't see as a possibility. Why would he want to work for Trevor Linden, who's been out of hockey essentially for 10 years when Bob's been in it? And so I don't think that's a possibility. You know, geographically it seemed sensible, but it doesn't make a lot of sense really. But he'll end up, I'm sure, somewhere in hockey the next time somebody needs a quality executive. And I hate to think that it's a possibility, but it could even be San Jose. I like Doug Wilson very much, and I think he's done quite a job there, despite the fact that certain players who should have done better let him down in certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. But you have to be realistic about this, and it's quite possible that Doug Wilson could be fired, and if he were, then I wouldn't be at all surprised if they went after Bob Nicholson to replace him.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Al Strachan, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, author. His latest book is 99, Gretzky, His Game, His Story. Al, come game four of the Chicago Blackhoxminnesota Wild series, we're going to see Matt Cook return to the lineup after he served his seven-game suspension for his hit, his knee on Tyson Barry, which put Barry out for the first-round series between the Avs and the Minnesota Wild. You know, what are your thoughts on seeing Matt Cook back in the playoffs come game four after, you know, what most people said was a pretty blatant cheap shot?
It's a disgrace. There's no way he should be allowed back. He is the kind of person that hockey does not need. But it's what happens when you get lawyers running things instead of hockey people? Because lawyers say, okay, we need certain precedents. We need certain rules to act on. And the rules must always be the same for every person. And there must be certain avenues open that we can limit these punishments after a certain period of time, et cetera, et cetera. All the things that lawyers do in court. So when Matt Cook goes to the hearing for what he did to Tyson Barry, which I think cost Colorado the series and millions of dollars, therefore, to the Colorado Avalanche organization, for a slug like Matt Cook to take out a quality young player like Tyson Barry, who ran their power play and everything, mm-hmm. which strangely enough, stopped working, and McKinnon didn't play as well, and all these other things because of Matt Cook. And they say, well, he's not a repeat offender. Well, we all know he is a mm-hmm. repeat offender, but this is the kind of game that lawyers play. And they say he isn't a repeat offender because there's been a lag time. There's been 3 years, so his slate is wiped clean. This is Matt Cook. And you know, you still have a lot of doubt about what he did to Erik Karlsson. How intentional was that? And that put another quality defenseman out for a long period of time. But because they're lawyers, they say, well, we've said 7 games. It must be 7 games. And so after 7 games, he's going to come back. Whereas a normal person who's not a lawyer would say, look, there's no way that they should be benefiting from this guy. And even though we don't always want the rule to say he stays out as long as the player he injured, because that could lead to some kind of circumstances where people would fake injuries and recovery periods and that. In this case, we're going to say, no, Matt, we don't really need you. And we don't want to risk seeing Kane or Taze or somebody else get carved up or hurt by you or maimed for months and put into a wheelchair or anything else. So you, Matt, can sit out because you won't be missed. You know, it's sort of like the Darwins, these idiots that killed themselves. The gene pool doesn't miss these people. The hockey pool wouldn't miss Matt Cook.
You mentioned earlier that about Trevor Linden taking the reins in Vancouver. I mean, the Vancouver started so strong up until about January 1st, and the season turned into a complete disaster. To your mind, what was the main reason for why, you know, the mess in Vancouver occurred over the latter half of the year?
These things happen. They come and they go. You have good years, you have bad years, and I'm not sure that Tortorella was the guy for the job, but nobody seems to want to tell the truth about that. If you say that the owners brought Tortorella in and they threatened to sue you, Gillis won't say that he actually did it, and he's in a position whereby he's trying to, Mike's a lawyer too, so he's not going to say the wrong thing at the wrong time. But I think a lot of it has to do with the coaching problem that was there, and they had a bad year, and there's a certain level of impatience on the part of ownership, and that makes things worse. And the thing that strikes me about Trevor and about Brendan Shanahan in Toronto on a larger scale is this change now that we're having in upper level management in the National Hockey League. And before, we had general managers who had teams and ran the teams, and that was that. And you didn't know who the president was. You didn't know who the owner was, really. But now you knew their names, but they never surface. And now you're seeing this involvement of higher level management, and it's cutting into what the GMs do. And that's been going on constantly under Gary's regime. And I don't say that to be critical. It's just a fact. It may be a good thing. Who knows? But the point is that it's starting way back when they took away all the rule changes from the general managers, which had always been a rubber stamp, and then the owners started deciding they knew more about it than that, and various other things that they've done over the years, and talking now 10 or 15 years, to limit the power of general managers. And so you're seeing now a guy like a president will come in Vancouver, and in Toronto, effectively, what you did was fire the general manager. And nobody seemed to notice that Nona's got fired, essentially. I mean, he's still there. He's still got the stupid contract that they gave him because they don't want to admit that they were stupid enough to give him a five-year extension last year. But he doesn't have a job as a general manager anymore. He's now Shanahan's helper, and Shanahan is the president. So, you know, these things are going on, and to my mind, just to go on another little side note, this is where the Leafs missed the boat. Why didn't they get John Davidson? Look at what Jim Davidson did in St. Louis, and now he's doing it in Columbus, and you could add him. Why are you getting all these other people like Burke and Donis and everybody? But anyway, that's a side thing, but the point is that you're seeing it, and to a degree with Cam Neely in Boston, although not quite to that extent, certainly with Joe Sakic in Colorado, you're bringing in guys, mostly former players, who are taking the status of president and who are, in fact, emasculating the general managers. And this is going on around the league. It just strikes me as interesting whether the impact of it will be good or bad. I don't know. I'm not necessarily criticizing. I'm just saying it's interesting, and very few people seem to notice that this has happened.
You mentioned San Jose earlier, Alan. We know that Doug Wilson is in charge there, but you also mentioned the possibility of him losing his job, and he's said that he thinks Todd McLellan should be back, and then there's a question of, you know, Joe Thornton and Marlowe just signed extensions, but should one of them be on the way out? How do you see that all unfolding?
It's going to be difficult to move those guys after this because the National Hockey League is built around playoff success, and they haven't had any. Mm-hmm. And they can perform at times, clearly. They can perform in the regular season, and certainly that brings in the fans in the regular season, and that brings in money, and that, of course, is the primary concern of ownership. But how can you move these guys? How can you get rid of that contract? Who would take that contract? And in today's NHL, you don't trade players anymore. You don't trade a center for a defenseman or a goalie for a winger or anything like that anymore. You trade contracts. And contracts always have to match up. And how can you get something from that contract? Those two guys, who is going to take those on and give you something of equal value in a contract that's probably worth as much? But because of Gary's salary cap, you have to dump contracts to take contracts. And so where are they going to go? So this is what happens when you have this kind of artificial economy, in that you have to be awfully sure that the people who get most of the money do most of the work and most of the production. And in San Jose, that hasn't happened, and that's a deadly combination.
You're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Al Strachan, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, author. His latest book is 99 Gretzky, His Game, His Story. Al, moving to Calgary, they hired their new general manager earlier this week. Brad Treliving comes over from his role as the assistant general manager in Phoenix. Were you surprised that Brian Burke didn't keep the general manager's job and instead did hire Brad Treliving?
No, he's looking for a scapegoat when it all goes wrong. And it doesn't matter who he hires, because this guy isn't going to be allowed to blow his nose without asking Burke first. So Burke is, in fact, the general manager, and it'll be done the way he wants it done. And he only talked to the one guy. You know, essentially what he said to him, I would imagine, is something along the lines, are you willing to do what you're told? And the guy said, yes, okay, well, welcome. And Burke admitted. that he didn't talk to anybody else. And you, people would say, well, you know, why wouldn't you talk to five or six people? Like, if you talk to other people and you ask them what they would do in that position, they could give you some ideas about what needs to be done. Well, of course, Burke wouldn't need to do that because he already knows everything by his own admission. So why would he need to talk to anybody else? So he just finds somebody that can come in and do what he's told. And then if things go wrong, you got somebody to blame other than the genius himself.
Al, we've got a couple questions left for you here, and we appreciate your time. This has been a great interview. We've had a big debate on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show about video review and should calls like goaltender interference be reviewed? Should there be a coach's challenge? What is your take on all of this pressure for more instant replay in this game?
I think you need it because the games mean so much these days and they're all so close. You got so much parity that a goalpost and a goal being half an inch apart can change an entire series and therefore can make a difference of millions and millions of dollars to the owners because the one is just a shot off the post. The other one is an actual goal which wins a game, which wins a series, which means now you jack your season, your price is up to $300 a piece and you're getting three home games and you're not paying the players because they stopped getting paid at the end of the regular season. So with these things meaning so much, I think you have to do everything you possibly can to achieve accuracy. And I don't see really that these things take that long these days. But why would you have it for some goal situations and not for other goal situations? You know, the NFL, which I think is behind the NHL really in this regard, still reviews every scoring play and every turnover. And that doesn't seem to inhibit anybody from watching the NFL. So I think just because of the importance, I know we don't like to sit around there and wait, but if you're watching it on TV, you do get to see the thing 10 or 12 times. You can argue with the people you live whether it was or wasn't the right call or not. And so why not go ahead and do it?
Final question, Al. Some chatter about expansion on the horizon. Do you think that's going to happen? And if you do think it's going to happen, where is NHL going to go?
That's absolutely going to happen. They want 32 teams in there just from a mathematical point of view. You put 16 on each side, 8 in and 8 out on each side, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's going to happen. The thing is that they can't make it happen until they get the problem franchises sorted out. And they got Phoenix, which is one of the big problems, sorted out. New Jersey seems to be pretty well under control, more or less. And the Islanders now are under control. They're going into Brooklyn. And the more they clean up these problem franchises, the closer expansion gets. Seattle is very, very much on the horizon, and Quebec City. They want to go back into Quebec City. And a lot of people say, well, why would you go into Quebec City? Because, you know, it's how many people are there? A million, 2 million or something? And so it's not really that big a market. And look at the problems you have in these small markets. Well, it's because it's in a province of 8.5 million, 8 million of whom are rabid hockey fans. Mm-hmm. And who will watch all of those games, and you can sell that thing on the other network. And you, because more and more you're going to TV money these days rather than in-house money. And so that's why it would go into Quebec, because it would be very popular in that province. And also they're back into Canada, which they don't really want to do, but you can sort of justify it in this case because it's a team that was there before, and it's a team that would create money for the American owners. So those are the two front runners right now.
Al Strachan is a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. He's a prolific author. His latest book is called 99 Gretzky. His game, his story. Al, thanks very much for doing this morning.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Hello.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Al Strachan, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, for joining us to talk about the playoffs and everything going on in the NHL. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. While you're at it, follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, NHL, and Stanley Cup playoff news is IllegalCurve.com. When we come back, top of the hour, we get into the Bruins and the Habs series. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Power play of the night, 1-for-2 so far. Face off to the right of Rask. This time, Plekanec, Briere, and Gallagher will start the power play. The Habs win the draw. Markov to Subban. Fires. Scores! P.K. Subban, overtime winner. And the Habs win game one, 4-3.
And with that, the Montreal Canadiens took a 1-0 series lead over the Boston Bruins. Game two of that series from Boston coming up 90 minutes time from now. You can hear it live on TSN 1290. We bring you coverage of the Bruins and the Habs series. Gentlemen, PK Subban, you know, was the best skater on the ice in game one, not including Carey Price, who I'm not going to consider a skater in this instance, even though he does skate, obviously. But PK Subban was the catalyst on the offense for the Montreal Canadiens in game one. Carey Price held them in that game with his fantastic performance in the back end, and game two goes tonight in what is, and that was a really entertaining game one, and I think the entire series is going to be really entertaining.
How much money is Thomas Vanek losing by playing the way he is?
The Minnesota Wild are probably happy they can get him at bargain basement rates now.
It's kind of a little bit of an aside here, but Thomas Vanek and Ryan Miller, I mean, they want to go to, you know, you hear Vanek wants to go to Minnesota, and you hear Miller wants to go to California. Who knows if he maybe ends up in San Jose, but the point is, these guys, they may want to go where those places, doesn't mean those places want them.
Sure.
But to your original point, Drew, I mean, the Habs are built around Subban and Price. That's them. That's their now, and that's their future, and they're in great hands. Subban can create so much on the back end. He's got a great shot. He's energetic. He's fearless. And then you have Carey Price, a calm, cool, collective guy who is just so, so clutch. And I've always loved Carey Price, and there's been some ups and downs in his career, but you give credit to the Habs for sticking with him. And let's give credit to Michel Therrien for as poor of a job as he did last year. Mm-hmm. He grew from that. He learned. And he has done it. I know they haven't lost yet in the playoffs, but he's done a terrific job of managing guys. He benches, you know, he demotes Vanek. He's not afraid to say to put somebody. You know, he's benched Subban during the year.
Yeah,
Bergevin has given him a level of control, and I think he's utilized it just right. And he deserves credit. The Habs look good right now. I think the Habs are going to give the Bruins a heck of a run. Prediction wise, I'll take the Bruins in seven, but the Habs are not an easy matchup for Boston. And I realize Boston controlled a lot of the play, and Price was great. But their speed and their depth, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, a few things. I agree with you, Richie. Thomas Vanek was a factor early on in the Tampa Bay Lightning series, but not the factor and not one of the main reasons why they won. It's been the depth, and he has not been a factor so far in the series. It's only been one game, first of all, so I agree with you
on
that.
And he's soft, and the Bruins are tougher than Tampa.
I agree with that. Let's be honest here, guys. The Bruins outplayed the Habs, and they outshot them mm-hmm. by 20,
sure.
And Carey Price was spectacular. And Carey Price has been spectacular all year, with the exception of a few stretches. He's one of the best goalies in the league mm-hmm. and has been for some time now. So he should get the first, second, and third star for that game. And he did get the first star. PK Subban was unbelievable. And that was a great shot. And I thought it was really amazing that on the CBC broadcast, PJ Stock called that. And he said, you know, mm-hmm. work to your strengths. Get the puck back to PK Subban. And that's what they do on the power play. And PK Subban, you forget that even though this guy wasn't nominated for the Norris Trophy, he is one of the best defensemen in the NHL. And even though he didn't play at the Olympics, I think people sometimes forget that he can be that dominant both offensively and defensively. And we talked about the Tampa Bay series last week and how he's been quiet, and we see that the maturity in his game. As far as the Canadiens go, I think Richie's right. Michel Therrien needs a lot of credit here. Danny Briere was a guy that was mm-hmm. not a factor during the regular season for the Habs. He was benched. He was a healthy scratch for a guy that's a point-per-game player, over 100 points in the playoffs. Who's taking that draw in double overtime on the power play? It's Danny Briere. Gets the puck back to Markov and to Subban for the shot. So Therrien's doing a great job of managing his roster, and he has some decisions to make. If this team goes deep, they're going to have to win three more games, obviously, against the Bruins. But he's got lots of depth there, and it's not Thomas Vanek that's really the difference. It's Rene Bork, who got another nice goal. It's Briere. It's Dale Weiss. It's the depth guys that are playing well, and they're getting production from everybody. Even though Max Pacioretty hasn't really gotten going after his 39-goal season, he's still contributing. They're all contributing. They look good defensively. And this is, I agree with Richie. I think this is going to go seven games. And to me, I have trouble picking who's going to win this one, because I think the Bruins are the better team. But the Montreal Canadiens so far in these playoffs are playing better than I've seen them play in the playoffs in many, many years. And that starts in goal. And it really goes to their depth and the way that they're rolling out these lines. And I think it's going to be one of the most entertaining series, if not the most entertaining series for fans. Because as we know, the Habs and Bruins have played each other four times in the last 7 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever seen a disappointing series here when you have these two original six teams going.
Last one was in 2011. The Bruins won Game 7 in overtime. Nathan Horton got the winning goal back then.
You know what happened then? Bruins went on to win the Cup.
That's right.
And swung, you know, that was a tip, that was a shot from around the top of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
So they always play him tough. I certainly think the history, as you talked about it, the history always plays into this. The atmosphere in the arena is the emotion that comes from this. And I think that's what the NHL is trying to create in other cities, such as the LA Anaheim series, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, so of course that'll be the first time two Los Angeles teams will have ever played each other in the playoffs. But we'll get to that later on.
An update on that is that Boudreau hasn't yet named a starter, is he? So
Boudreau hasn't yet named a starter. Here's a quote from Michel Therrien earlier this morning, talking about Thomas Vanek. He says, "Work ethic is not negotiable. Attitude is not negotiable, and competing is not negotiable." So he is, I mean.
So why'd they acquire him?
Well, you know, they acquired him. They got him for a bargain basement price.
They acquired him because he's a skilled player.
Yeah.
And he pushes everybody else down the lineup. But he's not a kind of guy I want to give $8 million a year to.
No, which is fine. And the Montreal Canadiens aren't in that position, so they don't have to worry about that right now. And they can, you know, they can motivate him. He's a guy who's got all the talent, but everybody knows that motivation and work ethic has been the knock on him over the course of his career.
He's terrible defensively, too. Like, as skilled as he is, he's terrible defensively, and so you have to be able to, if he's not scoring, he's not helping.
I mean, we've seen him put together 10, 15, 20 game spurts where he looks like the best player in the league.
Well, and that line's rolling, the Pacioretty, Desharnais, and Vanek line's been rolling. I know they switched it up last game a bit. It's been very difficult to stop.
When it comes around to playoffs, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Drew, at all, because I think you're bang on there. But as we know, when it comes down to the playoffs, you throw all of that out the door, because most of these games, as Richie mentioned earlier, are becoming overtime games or one-goal games, or leads are evaporating quickly, and you have to play defense. Because all of these goals, some of them are individual efforts, like Patrick Kane, where he makes a great move on Jonas Brodin. It's an individual effort. But a lot of these goals are down low shots from the point, down low passes coming from, I should say, the hash marks coming to the point, or it's a mad scramble, and you have to have your defensive zone coverage perfect, and that's when a guy like Vanek hurts you, and he's not as effective. So if he wants, and by the way, if he wants to go to Minnesota, where's the room there for him? I guess Matt Wilson isn't part of the plans there, but I don't know if Thomas Vanek actually makes that team better.
Especially
I don't know if they need him.
Especially with needs on defense and on goal.
Exactly.
That's something Minnesota can worry about when their offseason ends in about probably a week from now, give or take.
I think, honestly, I think you're right, Drew. That we've heard about this for a long time now. I think if the Wild would spend that money on Vanek, I think that's a big mistake.
I agree.
Oh, I agree with you too. I mean, you know, we know what he is. He's a flash in the pan, and when he's
one dimensional. That's
he's going to get you 30 to 35 goals and 30 to 35 assists probably. And he's going to get you 65 to 70 points.
Right.
Those don't grow on trees. Somebody will give him the money, but it's just a matter of who gives him the money.
He'll get you those 65 points in like 50 games, and in the other 32 games, he might be invisible.
Which is still
a good problem to have, as far as I'm concerned.
He certainly changes. This team doesn't get to where they are because without Thomas Vanek, I don't think. Because, in turn, this is the position they're in right now, because he gives so much, he provides so much depth to that roster. Everybody who's playing on the top line moves down a line. They play against lesser players, all that stuff. So you have to take that into account, too. Even if you play some guys even up, the other guys on the team are now able to beat the lesser players on the other team. So there's so many factors. But yes, on a long-term basis, it's a different story when you're talking about money as opposed to a second-round pick and a prospect that you don't think is going to be that good.
You want 40 goals or playoff success? I'm sorry, Alexander Ovechkin had 50 goals this year, but they didn't miss the playoffs. So I'd rather take the playoffs than the 50 goals.
Getting back to the series, you know, you probably said, before the series started, you probably would have said Carey Price needs to steal you two games maybe three games in order for the Habs to win the series.
You've got one already.
Yep. And you got six games to go. And I mean, you know, the way Carey Price looks locked in right now, and he really has looked locked in almost, you know, I mean, he knows big games
now.
They
haven't lost yet.
I know. They've won five in a row. I mean, we saw what he did in Sochi, so we know that he, you know, he's not going to shrink from the moment.
Right.
That win was. I mean, you got six games now. There's no reason why the Habs can't take the series. I don't think.
Well, no, I think it's going to be a seven gamer, but you can't play that way, Drew. Like the Habs did, and expect to win the series.
And I don't think that they would play that bad. I think they. I don't think that the Habs. I thought they got outplayed, but I also don't think that they played at their peak and got outplayed.
I agree with that. That's a fair statement. And Boston's going to be a. See, the thing about Boston is they're going to wear you down, but the Habs are pretty fresh right now. So, I mean, they're going to wear you down throughout the series, but the Habs aren't coming in having been worn down from their first-round series,
They had about 3 months off. It was like a college bowl game.
Not only that, but they didn't play against a physical team.
Right.
So you can play hard four games. They didn't play hard four games.
No.
When you're an elite team at this stage of the game in the playoffs, we're talking the Chicago's, we're talking the Boston's, you have to get an unbelievable performance from your goalie, and you have to get the breaks, obviously. Mm-hmm. You have to get the breaks, but the special teams battle for the Montreal Canadiens, you want to stay out of the penalty box. You want the Boston Bruins to take penalties. That's what happened. The Montreal Canadiens had not the best game. I agree with you, Drew. They gave up too many shots, and you know they were playing a little bit too much open hockey there. But I really do think that that's the only way you beat these teams. The Chicago Blackhawks, the St. Louis Blues, remember, in that series, they were up 2-0. But in those games, they were close games. They just weren't getting the goaltending. Ryan Miller was supposed to be the difference. Mm-hmm. They didn't get the goals. That's what happens. I mean, we're in a day and age here where even though there's a lot of parity and a lot of close games, there's only a few teams that can play with the big boys, Chicago, Boston. Back to what we said in the second segment of the show, these two teams right now, and I know that Boston lost the first game, but I don't know if they're going to lose the next one because they're going to be motivated. But these two teams, we could see a repeat of that final again.
I think the little difference between the Bruins and the Blackhawks is that if the Bruins lost this series, I don't think anybody would say they're blown away shocked. But if the Blackhawks were to lose to the Wild, I think people would say they're blown away shocked.
Yeah, I think people were shocked. Not shocked, but I think surprised, I guess, the way the Wild beat the Avalanche. But I mean
that to me was a toss up series. I picked Colorado in seven. I think if Tyson Berry plays, I think they do win in seven. But it was a overtime of game seven. It was toss up series. I didn't think, there's no crazy experts here saying they called Minnesota. I mean, who knew? It was a 50-50 chance.
Well, when you win in overtime in game seven, it's a coin flip. Yeah, it's the definition of coin flip when it comes to hockey.
It's ridiculous to say that. Because the Avalanche won the division, and they beat out the Hawks and the Blues to win the division, and the way they were playing at the regular season. But I agree, the Avalanche in that series they didn't play well. I mean, we saw the games at home versus McKinnon at home versus on the road. So yeah, it turned out to be a toss up series. That's not what I saw, but that's what happens in the playoffs.
Tyson Berry is one of the more underrated offensive defensemen in the National Hockey League. He gets kneed by that rat Matt Cook, and
that changed the series.
Al talked about it. You know, we can break it down quickly right now. I mean, he's their quarterback guy in the power play. He's a puck mover.
Yep.
A team that flourishes with speed through the neutral
zone.
They
don't have a lot of depth on D.
And they're throwing in Ryan Wilson. Massive drop off there.
Yep.
Massive, as opposed to replacing a third line left winger.
Right.
Come on. I mean, that was in a seven game series.
And you don't have a healthy Matt Duchene. I mean, I know he came back for the last couple games.
I realize, but in a seven game series, when there's one goal difference, it's overtime goal.
Yep. Yeah.
And you don't have one of your top defensemen. A guy who played in Winnipeg, if you recall correctly, played the wing.
Yep.
Because they were short forwards. That's how offensively skilled he is, and he had acquit himself quite well. So it's just another reason why that Matt Cook is a joke.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll go around the NHL, talk about the firings and the hirings throughout the league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.